This is Continuum Drag, a podcast where we watch sci-fi, fantasy, and everything in between. This week, Doomwatch, Season 1, Episodes 7 and 11.
Now, there's one other thing. What did you eat yesterday? Tell me everything you ate until 1 o'clock.
Well, for breakfast, I had whole wheat bread. I didn't eat much because I didn't want to be late for work.
Anything else?
Coffee.
Ground or instant?
Look, why are you asking me all these questions?
Anything else before 1 o'clock?
No.
You're a liar.
I beg your pardon?
You've forgotten your chocolate.
Welcome to Continuum Drag, the podcast examining the British food industry in the 1970s. I'm Luke, here with my co-host Jordan. What's real, Jordan?
I think maybe, because we had spoken about this in the first podcast we did on these episodes, that some of the tapes got erased. I think, after watching some more of these, I think maybe they were intentionally erased. People said, nah, we don't need these.
They didn't get the right ones. They didn't get the right ones.
Yeah. Maybe.
Well, Jordan, before we get into it this week, I did a little digging around. I wanted to get some idea of where Doomwatch came from, just to fill us in on some like backstory for the creation of the show. It was created by two guys, Gary Davis and Kit Pedler. Davis is a screenwriter, but Pedler's a science consultant for television shows. And they had met and worked together on Doctor Who.
Oh, really?
Yeah, apparently they're responsible for the creation of apparently a classic Doctor Who villain. I don't watch Doctor Who, so I don't know, but the Cybermen is what they're called.
Yeah, I watched it as a kid, but only have the vaguest memories of it. And I tried watching the new episodes and was like, I don't know if I get this at all. So sorry, Doctor Who fans. I didn't quite understand the grab, but people love it.
These two guys came...
He wears a scarf. Does he always wear a scarf?
I don't know. It might have been one incarnation.
Yeah, I don't know.
Anyway, these two guys came up with the idea for Doomwatch based on kind of a shared interest in experimental scientific discoveries and threats potentially to humanity. So they sort of put the idea for a series together and brought it to the network. And obviously the BBC liked it because they did three series of it. So they, you know, had a pretty good run of it. And we sort of talked about this a little last episode, but it was apparently popular enough that when it went off the air that same year, they'd planned and created a Doomwatch feature film that came out in theaters. And I don't know, I'm not sure if it's very good, but apparently it's more of a horror film with like an island full of ghouls.
Yeah, I was wondering about that because I saw that the movie came out after and I thought, well, it's usually the other way around. A lot of times we watch these shows and they've had a pilot, it's done well as a like a TV movie, and they're like, so let's make it a series. But this seemed to be go the other way.
But after that, it really kind of disappeared. And in 1999, there was an attempted reboot of it, actually. Channel 5 bought the rights off the BBC to do it. They actually produced an entire television movie slash pilot for it called Doomwatch Winter Angel, with the intention of going right to series after that. But the series just never materialized.
Really?
And from what I could tell, apparently the TV movie was relatively well received. So it wasn't that it was a complete bomb, but it was something that people have come back to, and like it has a bit of a cult following. But it was something Davis and Pedler thought about again, because apparently they took the original pilot, the Plastic Eaters pilot, and later they'd turned it into an unrelated novel called Mutant 59, The Plastic Eater. It had nothing to do with Doomwatch. They were just like, what if this were about a plastic-eating monster with the same plot, but it just wasn't a Doomwatch-branded thing?
They just thought that idea was so good. They're like, we can't have this fallout of the culture. We need an idea of plastic-eating monsters.
Yeah, let's turn it into a whole novel. People want it. People need it.
Hey, whatever does it, huh?
But kind of interesting, definitely some TV science fiction royalty in a way was behind the show, and it clearly was surprisingly successful. Sometimes I always wonder how successful these things are, but like the idea that it got three seasons and then a feature film does seem to imply that it was well enough regarded that people were like, they're like, people will go to a movie theater to watch more of this.
Yeah, fair enough.
But Jordan, let's get into the episodes. I know you're not feeling too hot about them, so we'll see how you feel about it when we get into the IMDb summary for Season 1, Episode 7, The Devil's Sweets. Well, on the way to work, Pat Honeysett takes a free promotional chocolate from a group of girls on the street. Meanwhile, at the Doomwatch office, Quist and his team are investigating the sudden increase in the country's smokers. And that was a truncated summary. It was going on and on and on.
Weirdly, we're watching two shows at the same time, right? We're watching this and RoboCop. We're putting these podcasts out as we do the shows. Is this not almost the exact same plot we had in our RoboCop episode with No Gain?
I guess very pharmaceutical related for sure.
Yeah, but they're both kind of about like, I was like, this is crazy. It seems like the same episode, but done from two completely different angles.
Very different approaches to both of them.
Mm-hmm. Also, I should say, my favorite thing of this episode is the title, The Devil's Sweets. It's like a mid-70s Rolling Stones record. The Devil's Sweets. I love it.
Well, it starts off in a very 60s, 70s kind of way with like girls dressed in mod fashions, dancing around, lots of like snap zooms. And these women are handing out chocolates to commuters. It's great. Like, it's like a music video is happening. They're all dressed in those like classic, like striped patterned mini dresses. Some gentlemen in bowler caps are grabbing chocolates and eating them. And as soon as they put the chocolates in their mouth, there's just a massive explosion, which is the opening credits of the show. And it's like the funniest intercutting.
Yeah. At first I thought this was a commercial. And then I realized, no, it's just what's actually happening in the world.
It's just the intro to the episode to get you excited for the episode. You're like, what am I watching? Are the Beatles coming on TV?
Yeah. It is funny. And as I said before, the credits for Doomwatch are misleading because the show is a very calculated, pedantic, discussion-heavy show where they go through trying to prove some sort of connection painstakingly, and the opening credits are Doomwatch, Doomwatch, Doomwatch. You're like, that's not this show.
Depends how you take it, I guess.
No, it's not. It's not the same at all. It's Doomwatch is all exciting, and then you watch the show, and it's like, I don't know. Should we discuss the thing that happened? And the other character's like, yes, we should discuss what happened. Anyways, as you walked into the room, and that goes on for 45 minutes.
We cut to the Doomwatch office. The Ministry of Health has seconded Doomwatch to focus on cutting cigarette consumption in the UK. And I'll be honest, they cut cigarette consumption by 9%, which seems like a huge number to me in 1970. Like, it seems like Doomwatch did some good work there.
Yeah. What I was more interested in is, what's his face? Who I only call Ascot. The character's name is John Ridge, Dr. John Ridge, who always in the show wears large ascots. Jamie and I are watching the show, and we had an argument, and the argument was, is it an ascot or is it a scarf? Because it was so long. His ascot, I say it's an ascot, went all the way down to his belt. I've never seen anything like it.
Oh, you're going to bring it back?
No, I can't bring that back. There's no way I could pull that off. But what do you think, Luke? Was it an ascot or scarf? Is it length? Does length determine what the name is?
I don't really know what an ascot is to begin with, so...
An ascot's sort of like a fancy net covering.
Isn't it just a scarf? Isn't an ascot
No. It's its own thing. You got your tie. You got your bolo. You got your tie, your ascot, and your scarves. I think that's your neckwear.
You'll have to put together some sort of visual presentation so I can follow you.
A Venn diagram.
But yes, this whole episode sort of kicks off this idea of cigarettes and cigarette smoking. And it seems to be, there's a subtext here that I was not explicitly stated, but I was trying to pick up on. But it seems like this is around the time that warnings about cancer from smoking have just started coming out in the public. Like, everyone on the show seems to like have just become aware of the idea that smoking could cause cancer. So like, some of the characters have recently quit smoking because of it. And like, this seems to be have written in like the zeitgeist of like, hey, cigarettes are kind of bad for you. And so sort of where this episode seems to have bloomed out of.
Yeah, you're right. And I think specifically in terms of you're mentioning people that have quit smoking, Barbara, our one female member of
What did you say your name was?
Isn't it Barbara?
It's Pat Honeysett.
Anyways, Pat, I called her Barbara. Barbara, she's the only female member, as I mentioned, and she comes to work that day after being accosted by these checkerboard women, and Quist is all honor for being late to work. I'm like, this doesn't seem like a place you're punching in and punching out. Ascot Boy's out having sex with doctors who create mutant rats, and he's not criticizing him coming in and out. No pun intended.
It's true. Quist really, really comes down hard on her, and I was just like, oh, it's so bad how bad they treat this woman. And then Ridge walks in and aggressively sexually harasses her. And then when she eats that chocolate, he body shames her for eating chocolate.
It's not great. And I'm going to say this. I think I said in the original a podcast we did on this, that Quist is kind of an interesting character. I guess in some ways he's your main character. He at least runs the team. I don't like him at all. I don't find he's an engaging character. He's kind of a dickhead, and he's not particularly nice to everyone else. It's an interesting choice for a character. Do you feel the same way? Do you think he's... Do you like I don't find him that sort of caustic way, but like there's a heart of gold underneath and he just has a, you know, gruff exterior. I'm like, oh, he's just kind of a dickhead.
I don't know. I don't think about him that much.
You're too heavily invested in the subliminal advertising.
Well, I was just thinking, watching this opening, I was like, man, it's so rough on this character. The only female character really gets it hard in the beginning of this episode. And then like, it only gets worse as the episode goes on. Like the writer's relationship to women is more and more suspect the deeper this episode goes.
I'll just say, and it's going to be later on, I love that a major clue to something that's happening. They're like, well, we know women eat more chocolate than men. That's a given. Everyone, am I right? Women. And I was like, oh, all right, guys, let's all calm down.
Anyway, Doomwatch is getting a new case, though, because they've been working on the cigarette thing for the health ministry. And weirdly, the computer started bringing in new numbers from the previous sort of like fortnight. And there's been a huge spike in smoking. It's gone up 49.2% in like 4 days. And they're like, there's not even any new brands of smokes. How could the smoking go up as much?
I don't know how they're getting these numbers. But yes, the numbers are so drastic that like you couldn't not notice them. Which, by the way, if you are doing some sort of nefarious plan of some sort of, I don't know, to get people to smoke more, you think you'd be go a little more subtle with it. You know what I mean? Just gradual.
I mean, it's not an evil plan. They are just trying to sell more cigarettes.
I know, but like you want your numbers to like not look so bad right off the bat. You know what I mean? 1%, 1% a week.
Their investigation in the spike quickly reveals that it's really only related to a single brand of cigarette, Checkerboard. And the only sort of new thing that's happening to Checkerboard is they've introduced a color version of their Checkerboard logo, courtesy of a new advertising agency called Shipley.
Mm-hmm. And it used to be black and white checkers. Now it's red and white checkers. So money well spent.
And the team quickly theorizes that subliminal messaging might be behind this, but all the studies into that say subliminal messaging doesn't work. It's not a real thing. It can't actually affect anyone. But then they witness Honeyset light up her first cigarette in 5 years, absentmindedly, as soon as she sees the package of Checkerboard cigarettes, and are like, uh-oh, some sort of Doomwatch is at play here.
Yeah. And they do something in this show, and it's not specifically here, but I don't know if you picked it up, or it bothered you, or you noticed it, but it started driving me crazy, which is you see characters go off and they have some sort of adventure. They learn some sort of information. Then they come back to Doomwatch and they explain the whole scene to another person. And it drives me crazy as an episode of television. I'm like, why are you doing this? I've already seen this scene as a viewer. Like, if you cut out the scenes of people explaining stuff they've already done, you'd have a 10-minute episode.
Yeah, I mean, this is sort of classic 70s TV show, though. They're like, got to make sure the audience is following along.
I know. It's a somewhat unfair criticism, I realize. It's just like what I'm watching. I'm like, guys, just get to it. Don't explain it again in very quiet British manners.
Seeing Honeyset light this cigarette, they're like, we better do some tests on her. And they strap her into a device to measure her brain waves, and they start running tests on her. And they absolutely refuse to explain to her what they are doing to her. They won't explain what they suspect. They won't explain anything. She's like, why are you doing this? They're like, shut up. Shut up, woman. Get tested.
It's terrible. I assumed it was because they didn't want to interfere with the results, but it seemed weird how in the dark they had to leave her.
They literally say she's a lot like a pigeon.
I didn't even catch that.
And they should test her as such. I was just like, what is happening here?
That's pretty good.
Anyway, Ridge remembers how she was eating a chocolate a couple days ago when she came to the office.
He would have tracked that. He's like, ooh, hope those don't go to her thighs.
Well, that's just it. She didn't disclose that when they're asking her of any unusual like eating things in her past. And he just starts like railing on her for breaking her diet. And that's why she needs to eat diet pills. And Ridge is just a total, like, they're not telling her what they're doing to her. She's strapped in a machine. And then she just gets like ganged up on.
It's bizarre how they treat her, even in the world that it's in. It's like, even in like 1972, was this cool?
I mean, if it was, it was a bad time to be a woman, that's for sure.
Agreed.
Anyway, they at this point connect the chocolates to checkerboard cigarettes. And this is where you said the part where they're like, oh, that would explain why the cigarette sales are so much higher in women. Women love chocolates.
Yeah. But have we said that the advertising campaign was changed 2 years ago, though, Luke? 2 years ago, they changed the color.
Yeah, so that couldn't be it. That's basically the couldn't whole thing. Is they're like, subliminal messaging doesn't work. They can't quite figure out what's happening here, but they've now tied the chocolate to the cigarette brand. And Ridge goes to the chocolate factory to just inquire about if they've had any changes in their sales, because they noticed that they've been using a new advertising company as well, the Shipley company. And the chocolate guy's just like, you know what? We haven't had a spike in sales at all. Like, our sales have been pretty standard. And, like, the advertising company just ran a new campaign where they were going on the street and handing out our chocolates without our logo on it, just to, like, see if people would brand recognize the wrappings on the street. And it just didn't really work, so we ended the campaign. But that's kind of them setting up, like, why the chocolates were there. We're kind of getting all the pieces, but, like, it's not all connecting yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they start looking into this advertising agency, and it turns out Shipton, the head of the organization, has a psychology degree and was trained by a professor who was doing research on essentially conditioning rats using checkerboard patterns. So, you know, it's all starting to come together.
What I love is when we meet this guy, he is actually Shipley, John Shipley or whatever. That's his name.
Mm-hmm.
He is the most 70s man you'll ever see. I love it. He's got like tinted sunglasses that he wears indoors. He's got like a big mustache and just like the greatest leisure suit on. And he just is so 70s. He's just all smarmy. But when at one point when Quist talks to him and he mentions that thing, like, yeah, he has a psychology degree. It's a funny thing where Quist is like, where'd you go to school? And he's like, wherever he, you know, Vassar or whatever he said. And he's like, interesting. They have a specialist psychology school. I'm like, you don't know this, Quist. You don't know each school and which specialties they have in psychology. Give me a break. I'm not Team Quist at all.
He's reading all the papers that are coming out. He's staying on top of his research.
You know what? Maybe Quist just spent a little more time feeling bad about helping creating the atom bomb. Am I right? All that blood on his hands?
Well, what they discover quickly is the conditioning of the rats has been done via experimenting with drugs to help make the conditioning more astute for the rats. And, you know, it's all sort of starting to tie together. But they're trying to figure out, like, how does this all connect? So we need Ridge to break in and steal a sample of those drugs so we can test it, which is my favorite part of this episode. He walks into the lab. He starts like grabbing stuff to take back to Doomwatch. He's not supposed to be there. He gets caught by the professor. And when the professor catches him, he's just like, don't come near me. There are 20 men outside trained in Korean karate, and they'll take you down if you touch me. I was just like, do you mean Taekwondo? Are you referring to Taekwondo? Is that what you're trying to say?
No. He did not, Luke. He meant Korean karate. It's clearly what he said.
And then Ridge just walks up to the fire alarm, smashes the glass and pulls it and walks out of the room.
Yeah. And that's it. And then he's like, yeah, anyways.
So bizarre. It was the funniest part of the episode. I'm just like, what a way to walk out of a room.
I know it's going to come up soon, but there's a line in the episode that I loved, and it's Quist, because, again, I'm not a fan of Quist. They're coming to this conclusion. They know there's a connection. They're trying to figure it out, and that's all about this show. They want to see how they get to their conclusions. And he says at one point, why did we have to have a female secretary? And I was like, Quist, you're a turd.
That's coming up right here, Jordan, because Honeyset is at the office. She's starting to feel a little ill. She collapses as she's calling an ambulance. And they cut to Quist. He's in his office, and he's just like, ugh, I hope this isn't our fault because all the tests we were running on her. And then the hospital calls and is just like, hey, can you go through her purse and see if there's any medication she was taking that might have like caused this reaction? And he doesn't even get off from his chair to look. He's like, I don't know where her purse is. I'm not looking. Why don't we have a male secretary?
I don't like Quist.
I mean, all the male characters treat her this way. It's insane.
Yeah, that's true.
It's an insane way to have one female character and everyone else in it rail on her. And it's not like they're going to learn a lesson. This isn't a thing where they're learning to treat her nicer. The end bit is just like, no, just treat her like garbage. That's what she deserves.
Yeah, it's true.
In fact, she is so sick, she's put into an iron lung and falls into a coma.
At all times, they do treat it as like serious because it's a bit of a plot point, right? Like, is she going to die sort of thing? But at the same time, it's sort of like a throwaway. They're like, yeah, by the way, Those are the stakes. Anyway, she's dying, but let's get more about how we find our conclusions. You're like, ooh, exciting as a viewer.
Yeah, I mean, that is the stakes that she might die, but all the characters are out loud being like, ugh, if only we had hired a man.
Yeah, like, ugh, who's going to staple our stuff now?
Anyway, Doomwatch calls the cigarette and chocolate company executives together with Shipton and the professor to confront them, to sort of figure out, like, what the connection between them all is, why there are drugs, why this cigarette logo is causing people to smoke, et cetera, et cetera. And Shipton, he's worried because he's been funneling his fees to the professor for his research in the form of, like, research grants.
Yeah.
And he's been teasing the executives with a cool advertising collaboration he's been planning, which he hasn't really filled them in on. They're both unaware that he's been running, like, a tie-in campaign where he's drugging chocolates to get people to smoke more. So he's a little bit up in arms. So him and the professor are like, we can't get caught for this. We have to destroy all the hard evidence. And they destroy everything. They destroy all the drugs. There's basically nothing tying them back to this crime. And then Ridge walks into Doomwatch and says, hey, I stole the wrong drug, so I didn't actually get us anything helpful. And they're like, well, they destroyed all their evidence, so we can't help Honeysett now.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know why that was a choice.
It was just to get them all in the same room and the stakes to be like, Doomwatch has no cure because Ridge grabbed the wrong thing or whatever, and there's no evidence. And unless someone admits to what happened, then no one will get in trouble, essentially.
Right, yeah.
Since no one's going to come forward and explain what happened because they don't want to get in trouble, Quist calls the hospital, and we see this later, but he basically calls the hospital and says, call back in 5 minutes and say that Honeysett died to whoever picked up the phone. So Ridge picks up the phone, he hears that Honeysett died, and he walks in and he just flips out. He just flips out and starts threatening to, like, beat people if they don't, like, tell him what happened. And finally, like, one of the execs is like, hey, listen, I think I still have some of those chocolates at a different warehouse if you want to test them. This isn't my fault. I didn't kill any women, I promise. And essentially, like, the whole thing unravels, and I guess they've caught Shipley and the professor red-handed or something. Like, the case is essentially closed. I guess they've, like, connected all the dots or something.
Well, I like, though, that, like, these horrible corporation conglomerates, apparently all you have to do is show them someone dying and they'll change their tune. Because I'll be, yeah, because, like, Hershey's really cares. You know what I mean? Like, give me a break.
Well, they just didn't want to be responsible for the corporate malfeasance. They're like, this is the advertiser's fault. We're not taking the fall for this one. You guys can have him.
Fair enough.
And you must have liked this part at the end, though, because the end of the episode is just Ridge getting mad at Quist for emotionally manipulating him.
It was the only thing I liked in the episode, and it gets 1 point for that. I thought that was actually really clever that he finds out that Quist just did this, like, really horribly moral thing to make him think his friend died, even though he treats her terribly, to be able to, you know, get to the sort of ends justify the means. I was like, oh, that's actually really interesting. Too bad the rest of the episode happened.
But doesn't it make sense? Because, like you said, Ridge bullies and sexually harasses her every day as if he thinks she's garbage. So it doesn't. I don't buy it for what. He has no self-reflection.
Well, the problem is that they have this thing where he's upset that she could have died. But you're right. They've never established a genuine relationship between the two, because the last time they were together, he was, like, sexually assaulting her.
They've established a terrible relationship. They've established an awful relationship between the two.
Yeah. So that's the episode. And I have to say, you went through it fast. And it's funny with some of these shows, because this is a 45-minute show. It feels about 6 hours. But this show is really about, like, them getting to their conclusions. But the episode, I found this had, I wish there was more twists and turns. Like, because you knew right away what the connection was as a viewer, right? So it's like, now I've got to wait for these guys to get this connection between chocolate and cigarettes. Like, at least when it was genetic rats eating children, I was like, yes, that's crazy. But this is like cigarettes, like, ho-hum.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the most exciting thing. And it definitely feels like cigarettes were in the news. So, like let's rip something from the headlines.
I think you're right.
But it's just like, because we're watching it like 50 years later, we're like, everyone knows cigarettes are bad, you guys.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the actual thing, personally, I think the idea of like an investigative show where they're connecting something works. But I almost feel like it should be crazy what they're doing. Like something you wouldn't believe, that like their team is doing this sort of like X-File type thing. So when they do stuff like this, like two in world, I'm like, okay, great, cigarettes. I don't know. It's the same. I feel the same thing with the next episode, The Battery People, where like, I mean, this episode has another whole thing going for it, but maybe we should get into it.
Well, it is another riff from the headlines episode for sure. So let's get into it. Here's the IMDb summary for season 1, episode 11, The Battery People.
Regis promises another food sample. Fish that's entirely bone-free.
Filleted.
Maybe. Perhaps it never had any bones.
Revolution in food technology.
Well, it's logical enough. I mean, we don't eat fish bones, so why permit them to grow?
Because the only means of inhibiting growth are dangerous. Dangerous to the health of those who do the inhibiting.
Right. But perhaps Colonel Smithson doesn't know this.
Perhaps he does. We can't simply ask him. We have to rely on Ridge.
The Doomwatch team look into serious health issues experienced by male workers at a Welsh farm.
I'll admit something. I had a real hard time with the Welsh accents.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I just felt like some of them were talking. I'm like, what are they saying? And maybe it was just because at one point I may have died from boredom, but I found a lot of it hard to follow.
I didn't know they had different accents.
Mm-hmm. They're Welsh.
I can't tell the difference. Someone at some point said they were in Wales, and I'm like, oh, they all sound the same.
Yeah, it's a little bit different. But we start on a, it's like a, at first I thought it was like a fishery, but it's more like a lab. It's like a lab, and they have fish coming in, but I guess it is a fishery, and they're injecting fish. That's what you kind of see at first, is that like, it's some sort of very, at the time, highly technological advanced place where they're breeding fish, or at least dealing with fish before distribution.
Well, this is it. This is the battery farm, or I think a factory farm is what we'd probably call it in North mm-hmm. America. And it's just, you know, a place where animals are, you know, we all know now these are pretty awful places where animals are treated pretty badly just to, like, produce the most meat. And I did a little bit of looking into it, but, like, this, I guess, in the mid-60s, early 70s, this is when factory farming kind of, like, it had existed, but this is when it became a mainstay. So this, again, is sort of a rip from the headline thing. This is probably something that was, like, hot in the news, the idea of these factory farms coming together. So that's where this is kind of coming from. Because what we're seeing specifically is like a fishing pond where they're working on fish at this factory farm. They're being injected by things. So we already kind of know something suspicious. Mm-hmm. And then this real jerk of a supervisor, like a real classic supervisor you have at work, comes out and he's yelling at all the employees to stop wearing their protective gloves because it slows down their work. And he wants them to just be shoving their bare hands in that water and grabbing those fish. And some 60-year-old worker who's there, he just gets into it with the supervisor. This supervisor is just too big of a dick. And man, oh man, I love this sequence between these two men. Because this old man's just like yelling at him. And he's like, I'm not going to fight you, sir. I'm not going out in the parking lot. My job's more important. And this 60-year-old man absolutely bodies the supervisor by making a crack about how no wonder his wife left him.
Yeah.
And I was just like, this is great.
It was so funny. It was one of those things where like everyone's had an argument, but like, you know, you've had an argument, you're watching an argument, and someone throws way too below the belt sort of line. That's what it was. It was like, what's the one thing that's going to devastate this guy? Oh yeah, his wife left him.
Yeah, it was great. I was laughing. It was so funny. Anyway, the fight gets broken up by the man who runs the factory farm, the Colonel.
Yeah, and he's sort of like, I don't even know what you call him. He's just like, I don't know, he's not really a dandy, but he's like a very like kind of proper guy, and he sort of walks around like he's the cat's meow, as someone older might say. But yeah, you see that he has interest in, like, he's on the manager side, so they send the old guy away. He like loses his job over it.
Yeah, yeah. Old guy loses his job. The supervisor's reprimanded for the workers not wearing gloves. But as soon as the colonel walks out of the room, the supervisor just starts yelling. They're like, take those gloves off. Take them off. Everybody just grab those fish by your hands.
Yeah, it's not a good place to work.
And meanwhile at Doomwatch, though, Quist is getting called into a meeting with the new Minister of National Security. And Quist has a real low opinion of this politician in particular.
Now, is this guy replacing the person we saw in the pilot episode?
I'm not sure. There's so many ministers, I don't know what they all do.
I wasn't sure either, but the point being is basically, and correct me if I'm wrong, Luke, is that they have a new minister. They're going to obviously come up and have to deal with them at some point in terms of whether it's their financing or what have you. And he doesn't like the guy, I think because he has like a military background or something. Either way, Quist doesn't really respect him, and he's worried that he may not respect what Doomwatch does, basically.
Yeah, yeah. So he has got Doomwatch cooking up some new projects. Because he's like, Doomwatch always is a naysayer. What if we showed up and said, hey, we've got some good ideas for things that'll help the world as opposed to just like always shooting down ideas.
Yeah.
But when he meets with this minister, the minister could not care less. All he wants to tell Quist is, quote, "Don't give me trouble, boy."
I actually like the minister. He's one of the few things I liked in this episode. He's just like, if it was me, I'd be like, "Sir, what do you guys do?" He's like, "Sometimes we find connection between chocolate and cigarettes." I'd be like, "Cut the funding."
Jordan, I imagine you, to me, are more like Quist, because
no.
I was just like, I can envision Jordan walking into a meeting, trying to give his boss good news, and that boss just calling you boy, and then you walking out of the office and saying, "We're fucking this guy. We're fucking him right now." And that's what Quist does. He goes back to the office. He's just like, "That's it. Dig up everything we can on him. We're causing trouble for him right now. He called me boy."
I don't know if that's an accurate representation, but I like the idea that I have that power. But don't you think it's interesting that this doesn't play as much into the episode as I thought it would?
It kind of is just the kickoff to the episode, because sort of what happens is he comes back and he's just like, "I don't like this guy. He was a real jerk to me. What's going on?" He's like, "Stop working on the good projects. Like, let's look into..." He's from Wales. That's where his constituency is.
Yeah.
"We've got that programmed in Doomwatch now. Is there anything weird Doomwatch can tell us that we can look at? Like, anything. Any slim thing we can look into in Wales to cause him problems?" And the computer basically spits out that there's only some small weird... some small anomalies happening in Wales. And essentially what that is there's like... statistically... there's higher broken marriages happening in that town with the battery farm.
Yeah.
And also in that town, there's just been a lot more like gin drinking and cockfighting, which is weird because it's a town full of miners who have started working at this new battery farm. And we all know that miners prefer dogfighting to cockfighting. So that's a bit strange.
It was the whole cockfighting thing is so bizarre. And I don't know if it's I'm looking at you too much, but do you think there's like a supposed to be a subtle sort of play on words or sort of joke there about these emasculated men? Am I looking too much into it?
No, you're definitely not, Jordan, because as soon as they talk about how cockfighting's unusual in this part of the country, Quist tells a weird anecdote about the time he went to Mexico and watched a cockfight and got sexually aroused.
Okay, I do not remember that from this episode.
Yeah, he talks about it. He's like, "I saw a cockfight in Mexico. It was very sensually arousing." I was like, "Why are you telling me this?" And later it'll make more sense when it's about like emasculation. Yes. But I was just like, "This is weird." Anyway, Quist
I don't remember that, but I wish they'd called in whatever the one female person. She's like, "Let's bring her in for this story. Let's bring her in and hear about how I was sexually aroused."
No, she's not in the episode. Don't worry about it.
No, she's still recovering from her coma.
Quist sends Ridge off to Wales to kind of dig up some trouble for him. And Quist, like, enlists a local journalist there and says he's a reporter, kind of there just looking into this new battery farm, kind of writing about the constituency of the new Minister of National Defense. And they immediately go watch a very bloody cockfight.
Yeah.
It is so, like, it's appreciate that they show the cockfight and it looks awful. It looks terrible.
Yeah, doesn't it? It splatters. Is it just splatter on what's his face?
It might. Ridge might get a face full of blood during.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they kind of discuss how the battery farm came to Wales and kind of saved the jobs for people. Because, like, young people were leaving. After the mines closed, there wasn't anything. And this is really the only thing that the miners could work. Because they're mostly over 40. They couldn't be retrained. So this battery farm was a real boon to the basic economy in this town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But was it, Luke? Was it really?
That's a good question. And Ridge meets the colonel who runs the farm, and they kind of, you know, they chat about sort of what happens on the farm. The colonel's very open. He, like, brings them on a tour. He's not trying to hide anything, with the exception of he's got a few trade secrets that he doesn't want to talk about.
That's right.
But essentially what he's done is he's developed a way to make food faster and cheaper, and to the point that he's made a new line of fish that grows with no bones. And it's so cheap that, Jordan, you'll be able to buy it for 2 shillings, or as they call it after New Decimal Day, 10 new pence.
I did like that, though. I like, because he keeps saying, what was the phrase he uses? Like a company secret, what did he say? It was...
a trade secret.
Trade secret. And he keeps saying that he's like, "Well, I've got a trade secret." He's like, "What is it?" He's like, "Trade secret." But yes... this I actually thought was interesting. The idea that they have genetically modified or whatever it is to create fish that I assume the speed is that they don't have to bone these things. So they essentially can grow them, kill them. They're on the market is what it is. Is that's why it's so fast. And I'm assuming they're also growing them to be bigger or whatever because it's in this farm. But trade secret. Don't worry about it. Trade secret.
Well, that gets them obviously looking into the background of the colonel. And they discover he used to work for a department of the military that was researching new scientific weapons of war. And this really quickly and kind of in a leap of logic leads them to deciding that maybe he's using hormones on the farm, which may be emasculating and making the workers there impotent.
Don't you think, I'll get back to that in a second, but don't you think this is an odd strategy that Dumas always does? They always look into the history of someone that always gives a clue. Like, as if anyone's prior work history will always indicate, do you know what I mean? It's like, I used to work on road work. And they're like, oh, so he must be creating whatever. And it's like, I don't think those two things were always connected, but in Dumas it is. Regardless,
I mean, I don't think that's the craziest way of looking at
it. No, I just, it just seems like we've had two episodes in a row now where like it's like, oh, this guy's got a psychology degree, oh, this guy used to work for this. It's just like, come up with something else. Why have they figured out is what I'm saying.
I see. You want some other means of investigation.
Yes, for a show where they just sit around and talk about the investigation. By the way, I'm glad that we cut out. We're not discussing all the scenes where they literally just sit around a room discussing stuff. But but yes, the idea that there's a chemical that's emasculating the men is the funniest thing. It's so dumb. It's so incredibly dumb. It's hilarious.
We, the audience, of course, have been privy to like the further adventures of that jerky supervisor, which has been happening throughout the course of the show. Like,
yeah,
you keep cutting away to him. And he's you see him try to get back together with his ex-wife. Like, a couple times he tries. One time very aggressively, and yes, also another assault happens.
Well, yes, it's not a great scene, but he basically comes back to his ex-wife. He tries making a move on her. She's like, no. He's very aggressive with it. And she basically is like, what's the point? You can't even get an erection. And he's just like, no, I'm not a man. And I laughed and laughed.
It is true. That very quickly establishes that, like, that's what happened. Ridge actually drops by to interview the wife about, like, the local dwindling masculinity that's been happening. And the wife does say, like, it all started when he started working at the farm. And the supervisor is the one who asked for the divorce because she was cheating on him because he couldn't perform. So she was getting her kicks outside of the house. And she even like propositions Ridge to like sleep with her, and Ridge turns her down, which I didn't believe for a second. There's no way Ridge would turn her down.
Yeah. Yeah. He should have been like, well, this is an easy one. Take off this ascot.
But this basically confirms everything they thought. It's like something happening at the farm is causing these men to become impotent. And they've tested the food from the farm, and there seems to be nothing wrong with it. There's no concern or risk to the general public. So whatever's happening involving the chemicals and the hormones is happening on the farm.
They actually say later at one point, they said turning the men into eunuchs. And I was like, well, that's not what a eunuch is.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what it is. Quist goes to see the Minister of National Security, and he's just like, hey, if you want to keep your job and not get voted over by your constituency, you better come to Wales with me to see this factory farm, because if the voters find out you're turning men into eunuchs, you're going to lose your job.
He's like, they're removing these men's testicles? He's like, no, they're just having erectile dysfunction problems.
And they head down to Wales to visit the farm. And the colonel basically is like, let me give you a tour. I'll show you there's nothing untoward happening. So it's Quist, it's the minister, it's the colonel. They're walking through this fish section. And he's showing them the fish. And he's like handling them with gloves. And Quist is like, hey, you seem very worried about touching that with your hands. And I notice your workers aren't wearing any gloves. And he's just like, oh, well, you know, I don't want to worry them. But, you know, it might perhaps make them impotent if they were to touch it. And, of course, the workers all hear this because they're standing in earshot. And they're like, I'm sorry, what? What did you say, sir? What did you say was going to happen to us? And the colonel's like, don't worry about it. Let's go look at some other part of the farm. And so as they're walking out of the room, the supervisor grabs the colonel and pulls him into one of the fish tanks, completely submerges him. They pull him out of the fish tank, and suddenly Quist is like, well, he's dead. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, he got a mouthful of that fish juice with the hormones. He'll be dead of cancer in 2 minutes. And then Quist says, it's probably more merciful for him because when the townsfolk find out what he did to the men, they would have lynched him instead. So it's better he's dying of cancer because they would have hung him. I was like, what are you talking about? What? The like worry about masculinity on the show compared to the worry about femininity in the last show is bananas.
Yeah, yeah, and they're like, anyways, let's put that unpleasantness behind us. End of Doomwatch.
Yeah, it's over. They solved the mystery, and the colonel's going to die of cancer now.
Yeah, yeah, it was something.
It was very bizarre, and like really, the gender politics between these two episodes are bananas.
Yeah, they're not good, but you know what? They offend everyone, you know.
Men don't eat chocolate. They and if they can't get an erection, they're useless.
It's so dumb.
But yeah, that's the two episodes. I mean, do you want to get into rating, Jordan? Or do you have any final notes we didn't cover?
No, let's get into it. So first episode we watched was old chocolate. The Devil's Sweets. Yeah, the Devil's Sweets. Did not really like this episode. I kept thinking of how much I liked the first two episodes better than these ones. I just didn't like anything about this. It just took forever to get to a very obvious, dumb connection. The only thing I liked was the last thing where Chris gets told off by Ridge, which gets 1 point. So I'm going to give this a 3 to 10. Otherwise, it's a 2. I did not like this episode.
Yeah, I'm also going to give it a 3 out of 10. It's a mess. It doesn't really connect. The central mystery isn't all that engaging. And like,
yeah,
just all the gender politics in it were like mentally ill. And then no one like has any self-reflection, because you think it's like, oh, they're going to learn something about how they're treating
it.
No. They learn nothing.
It is true, because they almost set it up that way. And again, maybe that's unfair for a show that's 50 years old at this point. But you're right. It almost feels like it's going that way. Like it's going to be, oh, the men all learn something because they've acted a certain way and that's kept them from coming to the conclusion or the solution or something like that. But it's just like, no, anyways, women should not eat chocolate.
We've seen a lot of shows from the 70s where, you know, it's pretty frequently for like the gender politics to be a little iffy, a little rough. And yeah, quite often, like the American ones, if there's a woman, they always dismiss it like, ah, she's a feminist. Something about this episode felt so much more insidiously normalizing of just like because they never comment on it. Like there's no one saying like, oh, she's a fem. Like they're just like, no, you just got to beat her down constantly and repetitively, because that's how you keep her in her place. And like, I'm just like, this is crazy. They're like writing these lines of dialogue and don't think there's anything insane about them.
Yeah. It has not aged well is one way to put it.
All right. What do you think about the battery people?
Somehow, I actually find this to be a worse episode. There's something really cool. There's an inkling of an idea here about the fish and I don't know. It just felt like it could have gone somewhere instead of like, I just thought the whole thing about the men being emasculated really dumb. And not that you couldn't have done it, because maybe there is some interesting comment you could have had about masculinity and about this town and about them having some sort of cultural effect because of this. And it's not like the show didn't have time. It's a long show and they have a lot of conversations, but none of them are very meaningful. And so you just end up with this like kind of boring episode. And I was like, what a bummer. There's something there, but like, cockfighting. Okay. 2 out of 10.
Yeah, I do agree. I think both of these episodes are built off of like that rip from the headlines idea of like cigarette smoking is bad, and we're kind of coming to terms with that. And like this one also is just like coming off as like factory farming. There's like a great scene after the tour of the factory farm for Ridge. We don't get to see his tour, but we see him leaving the farm and he's like physically ill by what he just saw.
Yeah.
Like it's a real precursor to what we now all know is just like these farms are like awful places for animals and like really are a question about our food, our food consumption chain, like how we get things to the grocery store. Like there's some real moral and like ethical questions around them, but the episode doesn't really want to get into that. They're like, we need a weird science thing to like focus on, and that's going to be that like we're using chemicals that maybe you're not going to be able to get an erection. It's like the stakes have never been lower with that.
Well, I think it's a good point, but I think you're right. But it's almost like if you're going to go for it, go for it. But they sort of like land right in the middle where they're like, well, we don't want to have a conversation about, like you're saying, food choices and the food chain and the morality around what we're doing to animals. And we also don't want to go so crazy science fiction that we can't have it be logically explained away as a normal thing as opposed to like science fiction. So we end up in the middle where there's like, oh, there's a guy who invented bone-free fish. Oh yeah, by the way, no boners. It's just like so dumb. No bones in the fish and no bones in the men.
Perfect. See, you made it even better.
Just so dumb. Just such a dumb episode.
Yeah, I mean, it just doesn't work. I think they're working off of a seed of an idea, but they just don't know what to do with it, and they go in a weird direction. I'm going to give it a 3 as well, though. I think they're basically the same episode.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we gave reverse things. I give the first one a 3 and the second one a 2. You gave that one a 3. Oh, my gosh. You gave that episode a 3?
I gave them all a 3.
Threes.
Are you even listening to what I'm saying?
No. I'm pretending I'm watching Doomwatch.
Just like Doomwatch, you don't listen to me either.
I listen. The men are turning to eunuchs.
But that's about it for the episode, I think. So if you guys want to get a hold of us here at Continuum Drag, you can email us at continuumdrag@gmail.com. And, of course, on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, there'll be some clips from these episodes. I'm not going to lie. These are such unevocative episodes. There are so few clips. I have like a couple one-liners, I think. But there's just so little visually happening. There's not a lot of clips.
Yeah, because what do you have? Like her eating chocolate and the guy falling into the vat. That's about it.
I mean, basically we get that great mod opening where they're dancing around in those clothes.
Yeah. That's about it.
But that wraps it up for this episode. So, listener, thank you for joining us. And Jordan, I'll see you on the next one.
See you then.
Can't get enough Continuum Drag? Commission a bonus episode for charity.
Want us to watch an episode we missed after using the escape pod or during a best of run? No problem.
Is there an episode of a series we've never watched or a TV movie you want us to cover? You got it.
Wish we'd comment on your favorite movie, content, or other weird media? Sure, why not?
All you have to do is make a donation to one of the charities selected by past guests on our website.
We suggest a donation of $50 per television hour of content we're watching, but everyone's means are different, so give what you can.
Get all the details about bonus episodes for charity on our website, continuumdrag.podbean.com, or follow the links in our social media profiles.
Continuum Drag is recorded in Ontario, Canada, and Seoul, South Korea. Theme music by James Rick Seidler, produced by Jordan Dulick and Luke Black. Special thanks to Aaron Hughes.